battle on climate
change.
Yeah.
So the Paris Accord, which has us reduce our carbon emissions to, I think, by 2030 to our 2005 levels, and then I think further on 30% of less than that. So what that would do is it would hobble our economy. We would have to have a lot more expensive energy.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, anybody that was in the third world or developing nation, of which China considers itself a developing nation, they don't have to cut back.
I've got a clipping where India and China are adding coal plants by the dozens.
That's right.
As we speak.
Every week they open a coal-fired plant in China. So they get to keep on doing what they're doing with no until 2030, and yet they're probably what the main. I think China makes up 50% of the man-made carbon on Earth.
Yeah.
Now, if you take that a little step further, we also believe carbon dioxide from the science is not the main cause of climate change. That there are many other factors. It's very complicated.
No, it's not complicated. In fact, I know it. It's the proximity of the Earth to the sun and the variance of the solar flares from the sun towards the Earth. Earth has just gone through about 10 or 12 years of, I think they call it perihelion. In other words, relatively close. Earth's orbit is not circular. It's egg-shaped.
Right, yeah, it's elliptical.
And so we were, for the last 10 or 15 years, relatively close to the sun, with the northern hemisphere tilted towards the sun, and it was a period of extraordinarily high solar flares. Well, we've gone almost all year now, 2019, with very few solar flares.
That's what
and
I'm
so we're cooling.
Yeah, and I think that this is actually predicted, but with no certainty that we could begin a cooling period within the next 2 or 3 years.
No, we already did.
I watch
this stuff.
Yeah, okay. There is still controversy around this, but the bottom line is to have policies based on science, and then to have like a carbon tax when it's pretty much understood by many scientists that carbon dioxide is not the problem. Carbon dioxide is food for plants.
Yeah.
And the
big difference, folks, between carbon dioxide and air pollution. Now, I mentioned Regina. I was the financial editor there. I toured the Interprovincial Steel and Pipe Corporation's steel mill, wrote the history on it, unpublished, quite a story. But they had an air pollution problem because they were emitting dirty smoke, and so they had to capture it and scrub it and stuff like that. Right. But they did. And similarly, there's a big coal plant in southern Saskatchewan. I think Beanfate is the name of it, or Boundary. But they were scrubbing coal emissions in the 1980s, the early 1980s. And so the big problem is air pollution, and including, you know, like Los Angeles during rush hour. Yeah, that's a good place for electric cars. But Campbell River, no. We've got so much wind. We don't have a lot of air pollution. And, we really locally do not need a carbon tax. So for the climate.
So renewable energies are not developed at a stage yet where they're that viable. What's happened, because I have spent some time in Australia, what they've done is the governments there have basically gone into renewable energies, and they haven't built any coal-fired plants. So the price of energy is now 41 cents a kilowatt hour, whereas here in Canada, on the coast, you're paying about, 10, 11, 12 cents, depending on how much you
use. I'll take your word for it.
I researched that with BC Hydro.
Yeah.
So it's almost four times the price. So people pay a lot more.
Almost all of it is clean hydro.
And in BC, it's hydro. One of our policies is that we want to make it so that Quebec, who has a large excess of hydro energy, they wanted to sell to Ontario, but Ontario's gone into a renewable energy regime, so they don't buy their hydro from Quebec. So Quebec sells it to the U.S. at a reduced rate, so it's not that viable. We want that power to actually to be available across the nation. At the same time, we want the oil from Alberta to be used in eastern Canada. They're burning Saudi oil in the refineries.
You're a smart guy. I'm having trouble with the economics of a spindly pipeline all across the continent to get oil all the way from Edmonton to Montreal. me, it seems ludicrous, but maybe it's there.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, right now they're buying oil from the Middle East in
by tanker, China. Though, but because it tanker, floats, yeah. It's cheap.
Well, once a pipeline's established, it's an infrastructure cost at the beginning, which actually would be quite a boom for the areas it goes through.
Yeah.
And so that's the eastern – so an eastern pipe – there is no pipeline from Alberta to eastern Canada where the largest markets are.
Yeah.
So they're buying
They're sending
oil.
It by rail, and that's the Megantic story.
Well,
and that was oil from the Williston Basin just south of Saskatchewan. And it's deep oil. I wrote the first story on deep oil in the Deep Basin, and that was way back. But that beautiful, rich oil is almost like ready to be put in the car. And so they were taking it by train all the way from North Dakota to New Brunswick. And then they stopped in Lac Megantic, and the train rolled backwards and rolled down into town and exploded and killed. So, you know, like shipping oil by train,
it's
not the ideal.
It's very dangerous.
Yeah.
And by truck is even worse. So a pipeline is a good safe way, and it would provide a lot of economic benefits to have it going to
It would be good for the Canadian economy not to import oil from
but we also
the Middle East.
Would like a pipeline to come to the coast as well so that it can be sold to the Asian markets. Because right now, Alberta is quite devastated. There's a lot of unemployed people that would normally have very nice, high-paying jobs and so on.
Yeah.
And their oil is being sold to the U.S. and
at
the U.S.
a discount.
At a discount, and they're getting $10 to $15 a barrel.
Yeah,
and when the world price is like 50, and so
35,
depends on what grade and so on. But so they're selling this oil at a discount, and I guess Americans are saying they're self-sufficient, so they don't really need the oil, but they'll take it at this discount sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure of all the arrangements there, but
so
we want to have the resources, the oil. We don't want the industry to be treated the way it has been the last 4 years by the current government.
Yeah.
And we believe that, just from my own research, I believe that pipeline that Trudeau arranged to buy, the Trans Mountain, was purchased from Kinder Morgan. And then the challenges that came up, they suspended their license. Then the government never defended or went to court. So we believe it was purchased to shut it down.
I'm not sure about that. I know Trans Mountain pretty well as well.
Right.
I don't know the people, but I mean, I know the project and I know the line.
So we'd like to actually have it.
It's very old, you know.
Yeah,
it's well run. And it's been maintained and like twinning it. Running another pipeline right beside it, it makes so much sense.
Right.
Our refineries, in fact, I was talking to somebody else on the phone this morning about that. Our refineries, or maybe it was you last night, I don't know, but the refineries in Vancouver and Washington State can't get enough oil through the pipeline.
Right.
And also, it can carry refined product from Edmonton refineries to the Vancouver market. But the gasoline can't get room in the pipeline because the dilbit producers, the diluted bitumen producers, are so desperate to sell that they're buying up the space in the pipeline. And, you know, I appreciate Trudeau at least buying it to keep it operating.
Well, it was, I think we're not talking about the existing. What it was to expand it. There was a permit.
Twin it.
To twin it, to make it, to rebuild it, actually.
No,
and
No. The old one is going to be maintained and kept.
Yeah.
But they're going to add a new line right beside it.
Right. But that permit was suspended, though. So by the courts. There was, there's some challenges to it. So,
yeah. But
that's what's happened. So the thing is it's on hold.
It got approved, but then there's a new complaint that is still going to get looked at, but it's got a very short window.
Right.
There's some First Nations that didn't get their share of the lolly, and so they've gone to court.
I think a lot of the First Nations in BC, which I've worked with over the years, a lot of them, I understand, actually were quite supportive of it.
Yeah.
And they get jobs, and they'll get revenue from the lease of the...
Yeah.
So it's the safest way to transport oil.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, in the end... you know, there will be another economy, whether it's hydrogen or nuclear or whatever, is coming, but it's just the technology is not here.
Yeah.
Eventually, oil will become redundant as a fuel source, probably, whether it's 50 years or whatever. Things are changing very quickly.
Redundant is not quite the right word. It'll be outmoded.
Outmoded, that's right. And then, renewable energies will have their place, but they're not here yet.
Yeah.
So if you go renewable like Australia did, then
prematurely.
It's prematurely. They have their own problems. They're not the final solution to actually
also,
energy needs.
I used the word outmoded, but I don't agree with that analysis because the long-haul transportation, like truckers and such,
right, yeah.
there you cannot run an electric truck for 24 hours and, you know, get some fresh produce up to Dawson Creek.
Right, yeah.
There will always be a need for motive fuel. Now, in an urban area where there's commuters, sure, go for the little electric cars. I don't mind.
So Max has, you know, a great vision for Canada in that, you know, his discussions with us were the plan is that we want Canada should be one of the wealthiest nations on earth. We have this incredible resources.
Yeah.
And for what various reasons, we haven't developed things, and there's a lot of people, like this whole generation of the millennials and the next generation, they I think feel discouraged that there isn't a $50 an hour job waiting for them, and you know, with a pension and benefits, and so
there
on.
Isn't a house they can afford
and
to buy.
House, they have a house they can't, so they're living in with their parents and things like this, and they feel like they're forgotten. Well, we want to change that. We want to develop the resources and have these opportunities developed. That I think the vision is to have provincial trade where hydro flows across the country, oil and gas from Alberta goes to the other parts of the country, and with this development and these resources that there will be wealth and then the spin-off industries and so on will develop. And I mean, the population of Canada is, what, 36 million?
That's a pretty good
number. So we're looking for, let's say, by the end of the century, we'll be 100 million. And you have energy needs have to be to develop this country.
Jesus is coming back in about 12 years.
Oh, well.
So I'm not planning for anything beyond that.
Well, I think you'd take the long-term approach to develop a country. We're a developed nation. And to develop it further. And to give people opportunities, we have to have energy. Yeah. We have to have...
You've heard, what would Jesus do? Here's another question. What kind of energy will Jesus use?
Oh, I don't know. I guess he could do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
He has the world in his hands. It's up to him.
He's got the whole world.
In his hands. Okay. He could decide to do whatever he wants.
All right. You are listening to Spirit FM. It's coming up to 20 after 6. This is John Twigg, live. And my guest is Brian Rundell, who is the nominated candidate for the People's Party of Canada here in North Island, Paul River, and I appreciate him coming in. I got to say, Brian, I'm very impressed at how quickly you've picked up a lot of detail about a lot of issues.
Right. Well, there's a lot more policies we have. I mean, we have policies for the veterans, like what's happened in veterans now that have served overseas in places like Afghanistan and so on.
Yeah.
They have a different way of being given a pension, and it's a lot less money and opportunity than what they had before. So we're going to go back to the 2006 model, and so that everybody gets the same for the better pension and to treat veterans. And all these policies are on our website.
What's your big issues? What do you say?
Well,
top three issues
well, the
for
top
Brian
three
Rundell
was climate change.
For you?
For me, I think climate change is just in that how I feel bad that Canada is basically making policy and charging taxes based on junk science.
Yeah.
And it's hobbling foreign investment is leaving the country.
Yeah.
It's hobbling our economy to develop so that there are these good paying jobs for people.
Okay, that's one.
That's one. The second one would be immigration.
Right.
Our party policy is to reduce immigration. I think there's been different numbers used. It was 250,000, then it dropped to 100,000, but it's sort of in that range. But the emphasis would be on economic immigrants, so that you come to Canada, you would have something to contribute. You come here to work and contribute, and you bring a skill and so on. And we still would want to accept refugees.
How about family reunifications?
Well, that's actually one of our policies, that family reunification would actually be reduced. So that,
really?
Yeah, that's
I that have it. A Ukrainian friend whose mother is in the war zone in eastern Ukraine.
Right.
And we actually went to the local member of parliament to get her to help get her in.
Right. But she
did not help, and the bureaucracy and whatever, we haven't broken through yet.
Well, in that case, she wouldn't have to come as reunification. She could come as a refugee.
Yeah.
So that she would have her own, that would be her own issue.
Now, interesting.
So, yeah, she would be a refugee if she's in a situation there.
Yeah.
I mean, so this idea that also that we would give a first basis to come to Canada would be, you have to be a real refugee. So if you're already in a safe place, you're not a refugee. This idea of the first country you go to is the one that you ask for to be a refugee of.
Yeah.
So we have people that often go to other countries and spend lots of time in these safe countries, yeah, and then come here as a refugee. Well, they're not really, yeah, refugees then. Yeah. I think I
got a problem with hundreds or thousands of migrants from Central America lining up at the border in Quebec and going through the bushes to get in.
Well, that's the thing, is you have to come here legally. We would stop illegal immigration. Yeah. So we would actually take Canada out of the United Nations pact for irregular immigration that Trudeau signed without any consultation to.
Huh.
So you have to come here legally, and that we would, it's not up to the United Nations to decide who gets to come. It's up to Canada. We would, yeah, we would reassert our sovereignty over immigration, and with the emphasis on economic. I think we're looking at sort of like at least half to 80% of the refugees, or not refugees, but immigrants would be economic, come here, yeah, for with some skills, and then the rest would be refugees. And we would actually focus on those that are being persecuted.
Yeah.
So that would actually mean there would be probably a lot more Christian people in Muslim countries that would be refugees.
Yes.
And so we want to have a humanitarian approach. And I think this is reasonable. What's happened, I think, is it's expanded. We're at the 350 to plus 100,000 per year. So if you get 1 million people every 3 years, that's like a city every 3 years. And if it's people that are, yeah, have,
we already have a housing shortage.
It causes problems, especially in the major cities of Toronto and Vancouver, where the price of housing's gone up. But a lot of these people come here without skills and so on, and then they become, yeah, basically wards of the state for a generation.
Yeah,
it's very expensive for us to,
yeah,
to. So the idea.
We started this with what are your top three issues? The first one was climate. The second is immigration, and I think you've. I know you could go on.
Yeah, I could go on, but that's probably, yeah.
Yeah, and so what's number three?
Probably I feel quite strongly about equalization.
Oh, really?
So those. I'll just give a little brief.
This, for those people listening that don't know, this is the system whereby the federal government takes the successful, wealthy provinces, mainly Alberta and BC, drains money out of them and gives it to Quebec and a few other provinces, but
right,
mainly Quebec.
And
to the tune of, what is it, $7 billion a year or something?
Well, no, it's a lot more than that. It's about $20 billion a year. So what happens is, as you know, you pay your income tax, all goes into Ottawa. You pay your tax not to the province, but to the federal government, and then so all this money's collected, and then it's doled back out, and so British Columbia, and it's all pretty much now Saskatchewan is a have province. It's not the place I left when I was a young man.
Likewise, when I was there, it was a recipient.
So they've developed their oil fields. They have potash. They have uranium. So now they're a have province. So they pay.
And the farmers are doing well too.
So Saskatchewan, Alberta, and BC and Ontario pay into it.
Yeah.
And then Quebec, because the formula actually doesn't include their hydroelectrical power, that money they make from that. So it's excluded. So they actually, because of that's their main source of revenue, so they actually get to have money paid to them. And then, of course, the Maritimes. And the problem, like what like Maxime was talking about, I think, and I agree with him, is that a lot of these provinces, let's say New Brunswick or the Maritime provinces, they're not encouraged to develop their resources, because what would happen is if they did, they would no longer receive all of this money. It's kind of like a welfare trap.
Huh.
And so the idea would be to change the equalization formulas to actually encourage provinces to develop their resources and over a period of time, and if wealth is generated in a province, then it would stay, it would tend to stay there, and there would be differences there. So that's probably my three top. There are other things like healthcare. One of our platforms is to allow provinces to address their healthcare systems, and then it could be a little different in each province. There are certain standards they'd have to meet. But we would turn over the GST, all the GST that the federal government collects, which is I think the number is about $40 billion a year. We would give that back to all the provinces, and that would be, and that's equal to about what the federal government actually does as a healthcare transfer. And then we would say, you develop your own system to provide healthcare to your province, because each province has often different needs and so on. So they could actually do innovative things instead of being told like you can't. So we would make it wide open for them to how to manage this, and we would turn the GST over. So as the population expands, the GST would also go up in dollar value. You'd get that money back, and they would, and because basically, we believe under the Constitution of this country that provinces have a jurisdiction and the federal government has a jurisdiction. And what's happened is that the federal government interferes with provincial jurisdictions all over the place.
Because they have the power of the purse.
They have the power of the purse, but there's no clear distinction about who's responsible for what.
Yeah.
And so healthcare is an issue for a province. Now, under healthcare, I don't know if you want to talk about things like this has come up to me from several...
The A word?
The A word, yes, abortion. Now the policy is for the party that this is abortion is part of a health care, it's part of health care, so it's up to the province to decide. However, a lot of members of this party feel quite strongly that there should be some legal framework around it. And so for those, I'll just say my understanding is this is the history. Up to 1969, abortion was illegal in Canada, so we had all kinds of problems with back lane treatments and things, and women were dying and so on. Yeah. And so it was made, after that it was opened up and it was legal. So it's totally legal, and now what it is, it's between a woman and her doctor. They decide. Now the stats are there's 100,000 abortions a year in Canada, about I think 14,000.
That sounds low to me, but...
Well, that's recorded on the health stats. I've just looked them over. And so 14,000 are done in BC, and they actually...
Oh, in BC.
In BC, 14,000 in BC, 100,000 nationally, and in BC. And then now the concern is like, nobody's going to say that a woman is not able to have an abortion. This is actually not on the table. What's on the table is late-term abortions.
Yeah.
So the 20... I think the stats are there was 800 abortions in BC that were over 21 weeks. That would be a doctor-sanctioned one. Things that happen outside the country or privately are not recorded. But so of these 800, there are probably some children that were viable that were aborted.
Yeah.
And so what's proposed, I think other counties have talked about a private members bill. And Maxime, and our party is open to, there's no political correctness here. We're open to discuss these things.
Yeah.
We're not told, like in other parties, that you have to support a certain position. You can actually have some dissent, and we have debate about these things.
Yeah, that's so, personally, I don't want to go deep into the abortion issue.
Okay.
But I understand that it's a major issue for a lot of people.
So we would allow a free vote.
Okay. Well, yeah, okay. You would allow a free vote.
It's your free vote. And I just, as I will represent this riding, I would vote for some limitation on late-term abortion. So I would say the 21 week plus, which, I mean, in the U.S., it's like the first trimester, which is like 9 weeks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, 24 weeks is, or 21 weeks is actually, that's the time when there actually is a,
would you have any exemptions if there's like some kind of a health risk to the mother?
Well, that and again, those are things that doctors to decide. Yeah. But I think if you just leaving it just to the medical profession, there needs to be some basis for them to say no. Say like, look, like you're like, why did you wait till 20 to this 21-week thing to?
Yeah.
But I know what happens that there are children there.
There's issues.
There's lots of healthcare issues there too.
Yeah. So, but you know, I don't talk a lot on my show about abortion.
Okay.
But I will in this instance. I too, I detest is too strong, but I really dislike late term abortions. But on the other hand, you know, if some 18-year-old kids have a condom break, and the girl doesn't want to get married to this guy, or you know, there's lots and lots of things.
It's a controversial issue.
I support that.
But basically, it's the way it is. It would be wide open to as a healthcare issue for women. They get to decide. It's their bodies. Women are to be respected with their choices, but there are some limits to what can be done towards the end. I think is what's being proposed here.
Yeah.
So,
interesting.
So that's something that could be done federally as a federal law. So
let's not go deep on that.
But okay. And then
go ahead.
Yeah. So we talked about supply management. We talked about immigration. We talked about. The other thing is probably important to everybody is the idea that is that we would want to reduce your income tax, and the way we want to do, we have a plan. We want to balance the budget in 2 years. But if you hear this from everybody, they're always going to balance the budget.
Yeah.
And they never do.
And Justin said the same thing.
But we actually have a plan, and the plan is that we would actually stop paying for a lot of things that like foreign aid is probably one of the first places we'd start. We would only provide foreign aid for humanitarian emergencies, and so on. So things like studying climate change in Africa, which is being funded by the Liberal government, I think that's $2.3 billion. That's a huge amount of money, and it's every year.
Yeah.
There's we just paid $41,000 to hold elections in the Ukraine. There's all this thing. So the idea is we put Canadians first, and not the United Nations agenda.
Yeah.
That we would take back our sovereignty, and we run this country for the benefit of the Canadians, not for elitists that are connected and for the third world. So,
Brian,
that's where we'd save a lot of money.
Now you've been the candidate you said since August.
August, yeah.
Have you picked all of these details up in the last few weeks, or did you have them going in?
Well, the thing is quite surprisingly, is all of these policies are sort of things that I thought of on my own over the last few years, thinking like why are we paying for these things, and so I was quite surprised how everything that I pretty much agree with everything that we're doing, and so I often wondered about foreign aid. Why do we pay for these for things? And a lot of this money going to places like Africa places like Morocco or whatever.
Yeah.
Why are we paying for them? And then the thing is, you never hear about how that money's controlled. And like from my experience, a lot of, let's say, people that are in sort of high up in government.
Libya.
Like Libya or dictatorships, they think that's their personal right to have that money. And I think it ends up in places like London bank accounts or Swiss bank accounts and buying property in probably even downtown Vancouver or London. And so this is kind of like a right of, if you form a government in a third world country, the money that you have, the kind of resources that they end up accumulating personally are vast.
Zimbabwe,
wherever. And they assume that foreign aid is often their personal money. And it's been explained to me, the reason we do this is because we want to help the third world develop and so on. But then they never go ahead and change those policies and put systems in place to actually become a developed country.
I'm sorry to interject a bit, but we have third world up in the Arctic right now. And, you know, like there's stories just a few weeks ago in the paper about First Nations reserves that don't have clean drinking water.
Well,
what are we spending our money on? You know, migrants from Central America.
Also, how many people in this riding are on a waiting list waiting for a surgical procedure?
Exactly.
And yet we'll turn around and give money to to like study climate change in Africa or have reproductive services in Central America. Yeah. Like, so the idea is that we run Canada for the sake of Canadians and put Canadians first.
Right.
And